Welcome to the Dollars and Cents of Westworld podcast, where we try to figure out if it would be possible to run Westworld as an actual business. This exercise will cover the entire show, so be aware, spoilers will follow. Also, this is a discussion about running Westworld as a functioning business. It is not a criticism of the story itself, as we do understand there's dramatic license at work here. Please don't send us any hate mail.
Hello, and welcome back to the Dollars and Cents of Westworld podcast. Today we are going to be picking up where we left off last time, which was talking about the three laws first set forth by Isaac Asimov. Previously we discussed what they were, the importance of them, how they were completely disregarded in the show. Today we're going to try and tackle how we would like to implement them to make them work for our needs. Do we need to modify them at all? How do we make the park run while still honoring that to some degree? With me today are Pat Swanson, Tom Ara, Joe Carlin, Paul, last name that I'm going to get wrong.
No, you have to try it, though.
Cernatinger?
Oh, that's so cool.
Cernatinger.
Oh, there it is.
Fuck. So we've got Paul Cernatinger also with us as our special guest. Let's get right into it. Tom?
And that was Chris Nelson.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
So as Chris said, right, we talked a little bit about the violations and everything. So let's go into what we would change. I think Paul last episode started with maybe a couple different takes on the laws that we want to go. Do we want to go and revisit those? Or do we want to take the three laws and maybe go through and rejigger them a little bit?
Well, I think we talked a little bit about like what I felt, like what I perceived the like working rules of the park were, but we didn't have the opportunity to talk about what the rules of the park should be. So that's probably a pretty meaty discussion.
Okay. So if we start going through Asimov's laws, should we start there and figure out what we want to change? I mean, I think we covered a lot in the last episode. Rule number one, we need to kind of bend a little bit in order to actually have the park that we want to have.
So to remind everyone, the first rule of the three laws is that a robot can't hurt someone or through inaction, allow them to come to harm. Now, we want our hosts to be able to try to attack people. I mean, they fire guns, but the bullets, when they hit, don't hurt anyone.
A Western world where you can't at least think that you're getting shot at isn't as, you know, immersive or maybe fun for some of these guests.
Yeah. And so I think there needs to be almost two levels of the host's mind here. I think the personality needs to be allowed to try to do some violence, but that the subconscious, like they ought to be allowed to fire the guns that don't kill people. When they have a knife in their hand, they should act very differently. To my knowledge, none of the knives in Westworld failed to cut people when they used them. And that's the kind of knife you would need if you actually wanted people to use it. So somehow that host needs to, on some level, know the difference between an actually lethal and a non-lethal weapon, but kind of act as best as possible like they don't know, so we don't break immersion. We still want most of the first law there because we don't want dead guests.
I don't think that having them be able to utilize non-lethal, it probably comes down to your definition of harm, right? If they're acting with their non-lethal or less lethal, however we're going to approach it, props, for lack of a better term, I don't necessarily think that that's violating anything, right? We probably don't need to do much work there. If they understand that they can't harm one of the guests by using these approved props, we're probably not going to run into a situation where we need to worry about it. They can still act with that personality without it interfering.
And if we can get that to work somehow, great. I'm picturing the scene, I think, at the end of the first episode where the man in black is attacking Dolores' house. Maybe it's the second episode. And Teddy's there. And Teddy pulls his gun and shoots the man in black and is bewildered at the fact that this gun did nothing to the man in black. Teddy intended to use lethal force. Somehow we can't just have that happen, because if they get their hands on a knife, well, now they can actually use lethal force. That needs to be addressed in some way.
Well, and I think that we can address it while still that's a really good example on probably the division that we need to make between the way that the hosts are currently developed, including their awareness level, and what we have in kind of our future state. We also see throughout the course of the show that they have much more free will than we would probably give them if we followed all the implementation steps that we've talked about in a lot of these episodes. We've addressed more of how we would approach their narrative. If we kept the narrative locked down, I mean, we don't, depending on the viability of all that, they don't need to have free will aside from that. We can keep them in a fairly robotic state, adhering to the different approaches we want them to take for the narratives, and nothing we got to worry about.
They seem to be built to be like general purpose sort of, you know, implementations. But then like the whole problem that we run into is when they don't stay, like, to use their parlance, like in their loop. And like, if they actually built out some of these systems a little bit more customized to like that intention, like the idea that like they have this hardware platform is great. But then like their software platform is, I think, too generic. Like they have the same software essentially for all of the hosts. They throw in some personality spice and some memories, and then they give them what their loop is. But I think that like the loop is the most important thing, like serving the narrative of like this immersive story that the guests are taking part in. And the fact that that's essentially like bolted onto this like attempt at consciousness seems like maybe not the best engineering decision.
Joe?
I think that the attempt of consciousness is, it shouldn't be in here. That should be totally separate. If you take this out, then their narrative loop makes sense, and everything would work a lot more nicely. I think that the man in black would find something else to go crazy about and keep returning there for 30 years, trying to find real robot violence. He just wants to be choked.
And I think some of that actually kind of comes in from some of the comments from, I believe, the board, or at least some of the high-level people, right? They talk about in the show about you're trying to make them more lifelike. Why are you trying to do that? They're making these comments to Ford. You know, everything was working just fine as it was. We talked about how the man in black made the comment before about, you know, you guys used to be so mechanical. They're trying to progress these things, and, you know, the reason they're doing it is for that more immersive experience. But I think the point that Paul and Chris are making makes a lot of sense, right? Essentially, if we have them stick to the narrative more, it leaves a little bit more of the free will that you talked about kind of off the table. It makes that law maybe a little bit easier for us to bend to give a good experience. But maybe not. We're not bending it so far that we're endangering our guests, and, you know, having problems on our hands.
Right. It's less of a thing where you're implanting the safety protocol in the subconscious. It's a continual act. The machine is just following the narrative that is a continual act. They don't have this free will. They don't have this consciousness. They don't have these memories that show that we don't understand how to get rid of data properly. All things that we've talked about previously, if we run all of that correctly and we keep it very, very narrowly focused to what they need to do, we can implement the safety protocols inherent in the laws without needing to worry about it. We don't need to fuck with the first law at all. We can maintain it.
So it sounds like what we're saying is that the first law, as it's currently written, we pretty much want to keep, you know, the whole thing.
Yes.
So let's agree on that. Let's move on to the next one. The second law, I think we're going to suggest more change too. The second law is that you have to follow any orders that a human being gives you unless they conflict with the first law. And I think that's going to look really robotic.
True. And so this is where it comes down to the level of verisimilitude we want to maintain within the park. We've talked previously about how if you allow them to take orders from anybody, then you can just start having things go off the rails where it's, you know, you get one guest saying, hey, I don't like the look on Teddy's face. Go kill Teddy. And the other host just does it because they were ordered to. So we can modify that some. I agree with you completely. I think that the one piece of that we would want to maintain verbatim is preventing them from being able to violate the first law through execution of the second.
Let me make a suggestion, and you guys tell me what you think. I agree with you, and let me make a suggestion. If the second law in this park said, you know, a robot will follow any order given to it by a park employee with appropriate hierarchy, you know, you should listen to Ford before you listen to a body tech. And unless it violates the first law, we probably want some caveat where a staffer could order a host to subdue a violent guest to protect another guest, but that's a tiny nit. They shouldn't respond to the orders of guests at all. I mean, there's probably some narrow edge case there, like relating to running and going and getting a doctor or something, but that's almost never going to happen, and if you're monitoring the rest of the park right, you don't need it. So what if they only respond to the orders of the staff?
If we have implemented everything else that we've talked about in all the various episodes, I think that fits. I think that the requirement there is that we do have all of that monitoring in place, that we are accurately keeping track of what's happening, that we know where the guests are, that we have some sort of way for the host to recognize who is a guest and who's not, all of that. If that is all in place, and if we're doing it, then there's no reason it wouldn't be. Then I think that hits it on the head entirely. I think that's a perfectly great second law.
I hate to rain on your parade, but I want to at least bring up the case of, you know, you talked about a kind of an extreme example of a guest says, I don't like that guy, go shoot him in the face. Mm-hmm. I agree, you know, they need to probably not listen to that, you know, request or order. But in order to preserve some of the, you know, interactivity in maybe some of the towns, they need to be able to at least respond to or follow some commands or orders that some of the guests give. Otherwise, the entire experience is going to feel very robotic. It feels like I guess what I'm trying to say is, as long as the request or the order that is coming in somewhat falls inside of the narrative loop that they are supposed to be on, it may make sense for them to go ahead and execute that function.
Well, yeah, and I think that you can build that into the narrative function itself, right? I don't think that we're trying to say that anything that a guest says to a host is disregarded, because then you'd be like, all right, I want you to make me a new horseshoe, and the blacksmith just ignores them. Or, yeah. Hey, give me a whiskey.
And they just stand there.
They just stand there.
I think what we're kind of touching on is like
pseudo make me a whiskey,
like authentication versus like access control, right? So like what we're saying is what we don't want is like you log into a web page and now you're the super user.
Exactly.
That's what we're saying we don't want, but that there should be like, you know, like, hey, when you're on this particular set of functionality, you have like read and write access, but you don't have update or delete access, like essentially function level access control.
Yeah, it's the same with any other application. You want it to be developed in a way that it follows the user's workflow. And in this case, it's doing the guesty type things that the guests are want to do. We want to make sure that they keep adhering to that while still being able to have the park staff step in and make immediate demands that are automatically adhered to.
And there's probably like a middle ground where you can do things that are immersive but not dangerous, where like if a guest tells a host like, hey, go and shoot this other guest or host in the face, like that host could like put on a good show of pretending like they're going to do it, but like totally whiff it on purpose, like whiff it by a good enough margin that it's safe.
So along those lines, I was thinking of an edge case. What if a guest goes up to a host and they say, hey, use that bow and arrow and shoot this apple off of my hand. And they're just holding an apple out. And then the host says, okay, yeah, it takes the bow and arrow, it shoots it, but the wind comes and it moves the arrow, and now the arrow pierces the guest.
Why are we giving them bows and arrows?
They have bows and arrows.
The Indians do.
So right. Swap it out for a throwing knife then.
Yeah.
Pick something that they do have.
But through environmental interaction, it changes the course of what they're trying to not do, trying not to hurt a guest, but trying to obey their orders.
I'm suggesting more of a, like, you know, bunting it into the stands as opposed to a line drive that you don't know if it was in or not until it, you know, falls.
That is too many baseball references for me to pick up.
What I'm saying is that, like, you know, let's say this person has the throwing knife and they've been ordered to do that, that, like, they could, like, trip and it could just go, like, way off the mark into, like, the roof of a building. And they'd be like, oh, that was my only throwing knife. Oh, God.
Yeah, so they intentionally roll a one, Joe.
Oh.
Right. Well, maybe a three. A one would be they hit themselves in the foot with the knife. Right.
So, alternately, I feel like the law doesn't always make, you know, sense to the common man, but if it did, that seems like a clear case of the waivers they signed at the beginning ought to cover this. If you order a host to do something dangerous to you or around you, A, you're an idiot, and B, whatever happens to you is now your fault. Now, we're going to make reasonable restrictions to make this not and super easy thing to do, but we can't prevent you from, you know, doing stupid things to yourself. And I fully understand that not everyone would agree with that.
Yeah, as much as I'm willing to turn this into a park where we hand out Darwin Awards left and right, I don't know that that's a stellar business model. Just because people are idiots doesn't mean that we need to encourage idiotic behavior that can terminate them. I would probably be more inclined to take the approach that Paul has mentioned. Like, we can give them the impression that the hosts are going to try and follow, like, these suggestions to some degree while still botching it spectacularly enough that, hey, they put on a good show, right? It's like vaudeville. It's still entertaining. It's bullshit, but like it's still entertaining enough that it's probably not gonna, you know, ruin things too much.
There's a number of ways that you could approach this. Like, I mean, the guy's about to throw the knife and then a deputy comes up and grabs his wrist and goes, no, you can't be doing that inside of city limits.
Right.
You know, like, if they go outside of city limits, can they do it? Sure, totally. But like, we've put some things in place here that go like, maybe don't do that.
That's a really good idea.
This is also a hell of an edge case, right? I mean, Let's think about the situation you've laid out. You've found one of the hosts that's willing, that A, knows how to use a throwing knife, not all of them, is willing to throw a throwing knife near your hand, again, not all of them.
You ordered them.
Yeah, but there's a bunch of in-universe explanations. Dolores isn't going to throw a throwing knife at your hand if Dolores is working right. She's going to be appalled that you asked her to do this and probably leave the bar that you have, you know, drunk too much in and then thought this was a good idea. Huh. There's a bunch of reasons that can be provided in-universe to not get into these edge cases in the first place. And should you find yourself in this extreme case where you've wandered out of the park and you've found Hector, who doesn't give a shit about you, and you're asked about these throwing knives, well, maybe he doesn't throw a knife, or maybe he does it in a safer way, or maybe he just thinks you're an idiot and... you know, who knows?
This does bring up something interesting, which is, like, let's take this all the way. You get hit with this throwing knife, and it's really bad. And you think that the waiver doesn't actually cover this, and you want to sue the park. So how does the park then, like, dump something out of, you know, this host that shows what the request was and what the sequence of decisions were that led to this action. So this is something that you can't do in like the Westworld that's presented to us. But it also strikes me that you can't do this in machine learning today. And I just thought that was a really interesting parallel that like we're right now building machines that cannot be introspected. This is the point I was trying to get to earlier. This is like very much a parable about what happens if you take that idea too far.
And it seems to me that if you don't have machines that can do introspection, you're not going to get any of these laws to work, right? I mean,
well, even if you do, you can't prove it. Like, what you'd be like is, I have this law and I have this intention and I gave some instructions and something happened, and now we're in this situation where we have to talk about it. But what is that something? If you can't, like, if you as an expert had to go into like a court of law and the judge goes, I believe this man is an expert or this woman is an expert, and you're like, you know, okay, we gave them the instructions on how to be a person and how to follow orders, and we gave them some orders, and it's like, all right, well, how are those orders interpreted? Well, I have no idea, Your Honor, is a crazy response that we would have to give today about a machine learning system, and they would have to give about a Westworld host. So I wonder if it wouldn't be appropriate that one of the laws has to be that you have to be able to explain what you did and why. I mean, not necessarily like a law of robotics, but like there should be some sort of subroutine or something that's like, don't do anything you can't explain.
I wish there was a law of software development. I mean, what you're talking about is also testability, right? I mean, if we're writing this thing and we can't tell why it did it, we don't know that it will always do it. We can't know that we built it right. It's not just a legal thing, although the legal thing is important. This is a failure much earlier in the process.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's determinism, whether you're talking about it in terms of like mathematical computer science determinism or philosophical determinism. Essentially, we're getting at the same issue here. Like, what is happening? Why is it happening? Like, can we learn from this?
I think that pretty much summarizes what we need to approach for the second law here. So we've established at this point, we're keeping the first law pretty much as is. Second law, we're making some modifications to ensure that our staff can make some orders, but we don't really want to give too much free rein. We've already addressed removing some consciousness. Leaves us with the third law. Don't allow harm to come to yourself as long as you're not violating either of the two. I don't necessarily see a reason why we need to modify that one. These are potentially expensive machines. So
yeah, that's where I'm going to stop you, right? Because I think we've gone back and forth a few times on what did these things actually cost. And I think we put some evidence together to say that they're not really costing much at all, right? We've got a bunch of them down in cold storage where it's flooding and we don't really care. It's easy for us to reprint these things and make new ones. I'm wondering if we even care about this third law at all. What's the worst that happens when if a host blows itself up? We print another one?
So even if the cost is low, I think we'll all agree it's not zero.
Sure.
So my concern about getting rid of my concern about the third law at all is less about cost and damage than it is about, well, the narrative. Hosts that kill themselves or damage themselves in such a way that they can't be a part of their loop or storyline can't be a part of the park until we print a new one or have a backup or get the backup there if we've got backups ready. It may very well be that there are storylines or times where we would want a host to damage themselves. I mean, right. People sometimes damage themselves. It is a possible state of mind for a human being. So it's not impossible that you could have one of those mindsets represented in a host in the park. And not being able to do so might limit the realism of it a little bit.
So would it be worth adding a qualifier then to essentially state we want to make sure that the host cannot bring harm to itself as long as it's not violating the first two laws or unless the narrative calls for it?
I think that's probably where I was going because I'm trying to play through one of the narratives that we see a lot, right? Hector riding into town. when he rides into town, there's probably not any inherent danger at that point in time. But as soon as, you know, sheriffs come out or there's other, you know, but guests that come out that want to like stand up to him, like we see in the show, if you follow that third law the way it's originally written, he should be hightailing it out of there right away, right? Because he's about to get killed, essentially.
I'm going to present a dissenting opinion. I kind of don't buy the need for the third law at all. I feel like it actually just speaks to the fact that the first two laws were poorly written. Like, it's essentially like the first law is do this thing first, and the second law is and then do this thing as a second priority, and the third one is, oh, by the way, wait, this is more important than one or two, but only under this condition. So, like, essentially the third law, which by order of precedence is the least important, is meant to supersede either the first or the second law. Like, that to me just says that you haven't actually thought through the first two laws adequately.
No, though, the third law is never supposed to supersede one or two. And in fact, that's a plot point in one of Asimov's stories. There's a whole, I think, ship full or warehouse full, some, you know, large facility full of robots, where one of them doesn't have the three laws in place, and the rest do. And there's a detective there that's trying to figure out which one is it. We don't want to scrap all of them. They're expensive. And he sets up a situation where he's in danger, and a robot with the three laws would save him. But the robot thinks that they would be destroyed by doing it. They aren't, in fact. And so he runs this test repeatedly until he finds the robot that doesn't try to save him, because a robot that doesn't try to save him is thinking about its own safety, not his.
Which is the first law.
Right. So it's never the third law is never supposed to supersede one or two.
But it clearly does.
It explicitly doesn't.
I don't know. I guess that's,
well, give me an example. Like, what are you, where's like, the case where
if it wasn't meant to supersede it, why does it reference both of them? Like, basically follow the first law unless the second law would be broken, right? That's the third law.
No. The third law is don't damage yourself unless you need to accomplish one or two. So you're allowed to damage yourself. Like, you could throw yourself in front of a throwing knife, say, where you would take the damage instead of the person. Or you could be ordered by a person to destroy yourself, and you'd have to do it because you'd been ordered. Second law.
While I agree with you, I still don't think we need that third law.
Because?
Hosts are not people and Joe doesn't care about them.
That's fair.
Well, mostly that. Because we can reprint new ones, and if a robot gets destroyed, you move on.
So, we've got kind of split camps here. I've been kind of waffling back and forth. I think ultimately, we're making some assumptions on the cost that I think would drive this decision one way or the other.
That's fair.
I think if the cost is negligible, then you're right. Fuck it. Who cares? Let them destroy themselves. It's not a big deal. If the cost is much higher than we are potentially seeing, like, just because they can print them easily doesn't mean that it's a zero-sum game. Like, we may be taking a big loss every time they have to go and do that from scratch. If that's the case, the third law could be crucial to maintaining our business enterprise.
So for clarity, we're just trying to figure out if Westworld would be better off with or without the third law, not the importance of the third law in the three laws,
well,
right?
I think making that determination, though, is explicitly tied to the cost.
Agreed.
Because what we're saying is if it is no cost, then we don't care. That third law is always going to be a business value proposition law, right? That's really what it boils down to. If the cost is no object, then I don't think anyone has ever cared about the third law. If the cost is a serious object, third law is immensely important to make sure you don't go under.
So I kind of feel like the third law is a massive Band-Aid on not doing QA right. So in Asimov's world, they're general purpose robotics. They could be used for anything, and I could understand why you might want this safeguard, because you don't know what situation they're going to be in. But that's absolutely not the case in Westworld. They are only here in a situation that you have entirely created yourself. if you need to slap this don't break yourself rule on these hosts, it means you have ruined their narratives. You've got, for this to matter, it's not it happens once in every long while. It's these hosts are regularly destroying themselves for no reason that makes sense in the narrative, because we already said if it makes sense in the narrative, we'd probably want to keep it. So maybe you shouldn't just ban them from killing themselves. Maybe you should fix the problem for why they're killing themselves when you don't want them to.
That's really well stated. I think you're right. I think that we did mention previously that why do they need to have free will? Why do they need to have a consciousness? Why do we have any of that stuff going on? If we have taken that approach of we are designing them to operate on their narrative, and they're not true AI, which is really what Asimov was dealing with, then why do we care? We should have protocols and safeguards in place within the code itself that already prevent them from going off the rails and doing things we don't want them to, including damaging themselves.
So I think a lot of the stuff we've been talking about when we're changing any of these laws, it's all we're basing it all around, well, if they need to do it for the narrative, it's okay. I think that's putting a lot of emphasis and power on the narrative. And one thing that we, to be honest, we haven't talked about the narratives themselves too much throughout the course of the show. The narratives in this world that we're creating right now with the laws and the conversation we're having are going to be ridiculously powerful, right? They're going to allow these hosts to essentially bend the rules. So I think we got to have a small conversation at least around, are there certain guidelines or safeguards that we need to actually bake into the narrative side of things rather than the law side of things to make sure that we don't have chaos all the time?
Weren't the narratives written in React?
Well, like whatever the narrative actually has to do, like, needs to be informed by what the hosts are capable of supporting. So like in the Westworld we have today, we don't have the situation where like the host will like whiff their throwing knife, right? So you shouldn't have narratives where hosts are throwing knives at people, right? But if you did have that, then, you know, like the guy who admittedly I think I don't like at all, who's like the head of narrative, right? He would have a lot more leeway to write some more interesting stories. But it's just like anything, like you have to understand like the requirements and the capabilities and limitations of the system before you start developing use cases for it. The system either needs to support your use case or you need to understand not to do that thing.
Fair.
So it sounds like we've covered all three laws. We want to keep the first one basically whole cloth. The second one, following orders, mostly for the staff. And the third one, it sounds like we're saying we pretty much don't need as a blanket rule, but we've got to think about it in the right places, largely the narrative, you know, on the case-by-case basis for the characters. Is there anything that we need? I mean, these laws, we're talking about general purpose laws. They apply to basically all the hosts. Is there anything else that needs to be at this sort of rule level for all of them that isn't in these three rules?
Yeah. There's only one thing that I can really think of, and that is probably the fourth law that got written by Dylev.
Explain, please, as we all frantically Google.
Yeah, as everyone's frantically Googling it. So it was an extension that a robot has to establish its identity as a robot in all cases. Now, I think that we need something. It doesn't necessarily need to be phrased exactly like that, but robots, the hosts, should at any point in time be able to instantly recognize what is a host and what is not a host. It's just extra safety protocol measures. I think if we've done everything else right, the way that we've talked about previously, they already know this. But it's something that we want to make sure, since we're talking about laws, it was one that was developed after Asimov. It's one that really touches on, we can't make sure that they're not harming guests if they can't tell the difference between a guest and another host.
So can the hosts have some sort of wireless signal that they emit to each other to know that that is a host?
Right.
Or do we give them like a gold star?
It's like IFF, Jesus. Right? Like if they all had some sort of IFF mechanism.
So you also want to think about fail safe versus fail deadly. If you've got the idea there, think like a nuclear reactor. Fail safe means that when something breaks, the nuclear reactor shuts down. Fail deadly means, well, maybe you can't shut it down then. So in this example with the host, the identification system where, you know, obviously guests don't send out IFF signals, but the hosts do. If that thing breaks, now it looks like a guest. That's probably not ideal. That seems more like fail deadly than fail safe to me.
How do you see it as fail deadly rather than fail safe? If we have very stringent safety protocols in place for them to recognize them as guests, if they're no longer giving off their IFF signal, so now we're working under the assumption that they're a guest, we're keeping them from accidentally hurting anything. Yeah, granted, it's not going to do anything to – it might not fit the narrative for something that's supposed to be happening, but we don't have to worry about a guest being injured.
I was thinking more along the lines of, and you guys didn't say this, so it's not really a criticism of what you said. The other sort of class of person that's, or entity, Joe, and hosts aren't people, got it. The other class of entity that moves around and does things and looks like a human in this park is a member of the staff. And we really do not want a host that could accidentally be confused for a member of the staff. If, say, Hector looked like a staff member to the rest of the hosts, this is going to get all kinds of fucked up.
So I talked a little bit about loving bad movies before. So in Future World, the sequel to the original West World, where they inexplicably call it Western World for the entire movie, there are hosts who are part of the staff. They're actually in charge of security because it was deemed that the humans could not keep up with the needs previously. And if I'm not recalling this incorrectly, I think they can actually tell the difference between hosts and humans, and it famously goes bad.
That sounds like a Michael Crichton story for sure.
All right, today we have talked about the laws some more. We've continued to discuss their importance. We've talked about what we would tweak to make them work. Essentially, we're keeping the first law as written. We're modifying the second law to accommodate the instructions for the staff members taking precedence over the guests themselves. We've shit-canned the third law entirely because we should be properly coding these hosts to not need to worry about it. And we're making sure that there's some sort of identification probably that's present so we can differentiate between all of these and make sure that these laws can be adhered to. That's really it for today. Stay tuned. Next time, we're going to take a different tack and talk about some ethics. Thanks.
To find out more about this podcast and for the show notes of this episode, please go to dollarsandcentsofwestworld.com. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/dollarsandcentsofwestworld and on Twitter at _DASOW.
Paul, that was really well said. I want to hire you.
For what?
For real life.
To be a host.
Will you buy me throwing knives?
No.
But I will.
Offer accepted.
Edge case number 2, discuss.